Welcome to the Strong Girl Podcast, a podcast for and about strong women and how they overcame the things that once made them feel weak. Join me, your host, Samantha Russo, as I discuss everything from mindset to physical health with guests that will surely inspire and motivate you. There will be laughs, there will be tears, and maybe a few F-bombs, but more importantly, lessons to learn to help you grow and embrace your strong girl. I am back. Oh my gosh. I took an unplanned hiatus. And first of all, I'm sorry about that. I should have probably filled everyone in, huh? But here's the thing. I do this podcast for fun. And I kind of made the commitment to myself that if it ever started to feel like I was putting too much pressure on it or on myself, that I was going to kind of take a step back. And it kind of happened unexpectedly because I was on such a groove where I was scheduling multiple interviews a week and was able to have them just ready to launch and go on each Tuesday. And then it got to a point where scheduling those interviews and doing the interviews itself started to give me some anxiety. And I've kind of talked about my weird thing with, you know, talking to people on the phone. I don't know why, but I've always felt so uncomfortable talking to people on the phone. And that's how I do a lot of my interviews, mostly just because I only have one mic. And a lot of the people I'm interviewing are not close to me. So sometimes I get a little bit anxious talking to people on the phone. I'm not sure if that's like a millennial thing, just growing up texting or whatever. But yeah, so sometimes I get a little nervous talking to people on the phone. So scheduling those interviews and knowing that I would have to do the interview over the phone was not bringing me joy. Very Marie Kondo of me. Marie Kondo? I don't know. I don't watch the show. I probably should. But it wasn't really exciting me and lighting me up the way that it was in the beginning. But I started to, so I just gave it some space and then it started to come back. And I got some great interview responses from some incredible women. And I'm super excited to be back and super excited to be sharing their stories with you. And this episode, this topic, I want to be very clear and preface that this is a very sensitive topic. And, you know, it may have some triggering topics. So we are going to be discussing miscarriage on the show today. And my incredibly brave friend Amanda has reached out to me and wanted to share her story. And it is a very recent story, a recent experience for her. So we both just want to make it very clear to the audience that, you know, if you have in the past or are currently struggling with, you know, the loss or a missed pregnancy, a miscarriage, and you are not in a good place with that, then please feel free to turn off this episode. No judgments, no harm, no foul there. We also get very in-depth and really go into very strong detail throughout the interview. So if you are not comfortable hearing about this as well, then again, this episode may not be right for you. Okay, welcome back to another episode of the Strong Girl Podcast. I'm super excited for this episode. Don't mind my voice right now, recovering from some sort of sickness. But that's okay. We're rolling with the punches. I have my friend Amanda Fay here, and Amanda is another one of my Instagram friends. I have a lot of Instagram friends. I think I was like searching the Manchester, New Hampshire tag, and I found you working out, and I was like, oh, this girl works out too. So I'm going to be her friend and watch everything she does. And
So yeah, girl crush as well. Amanda Fay is a pre and postnatal corrective exercise and diastasis specialist and the founder and co-owner of The Functional Bump. She is the voice behind the blog, thefunctionalbump.com, which provides industry knowledge in all things preconception, pregnancy, and postpartum exercise, nutrition, and mindfulness. The mission behind The Functional Bump is to lead women to move, think, and breathe throughout their preconception, pregnancy, and postpartum journeys to be stronger and more functional than they ever have been before. Amanda is a certified personal trainer, pre- and postnatal corrective exercise specialist, core and diastasis specialist, and women's holistic health coach, receiving her education from Endicott College, NASM, Fit for Birth, and the Institute of Integrative Nutrition. Amanda specializes in pre- and postnatal corrective exercise, group fitness, fertility awareness and ovulation tracking, and preconception planning. Along with private in-home and virtual training, Amanda also teaches weekly pre- and postnatal group fitness classes at Eden Yoga in Concord, as well as Nini Bambini in Bedford, New Hampshire. Amanda is also a pre- and postnatal head coach for Fit for Birth and a coach at her local Orange Theory Fitness. Woo! Basically, she's the bomb. And so this kind of has nothing to do with the episode, but I'm interested because you have so many qualifications and you're young. Do you ever feel like the imposter syndrome thing when you're talking to potential new clients or launching a new program?
Well, first, thank you so much for having me, Sam. And I think it's the same thing towards you, the girl crush. When we first found each other on Instagram, I was like, yes, we're like almost the same people. We both live in New Hampshire. So this is awesome. We actually live 8 minutes away from each other.
Ooh.
Yes. Fun fact. I'm not a stalker or anything. No, I never get the imposter syndrome because... You know, I think one person might have said to me, well, you've never had kids before. Like, how are you working with so many pregnant moms and postpartum moms? And I said, well, male gynecologists have never had children either. And they're like, or obstetricians, they're delivering babies. So it doesn't matter at all. You just need to be confident and know your stuff. And I do.
I love that. Okay. So how did you get started in the health and fitness industry, and when did you know that you wanted it to be a career?
So I've always been active. I've danced. My mom put me through dance. I was a dancer for about 16 years. When I went to college, I went to college in a degree for something else, not health and wellness related. I wish it was. And during college, I was super unhealthy. I think it was during like the time in my life where I was trying to find myself. And you have that common theme in your podcast, like about girls who have had the dark periods and then found the light. Mm-hmm. And that was definitely one of my dark periods. I suffer from mental illness, and right now I cope with it and I don't have it because I exercise and eat right. And in college I had it full blown because I wasn't taking care of myself. And so at one point my psychotherapist diagnosed me with depression, anxiety, and bipolar all at the same time and had me on the cocktail of prescription medications all at the same time. And to this day, like I really can't tell you that I suffer from any of those anymore. Yeah. And if I do have a little bit of anxiety, it's totally normal and I breathe and I get through that. But I think I had to see those really dark times in college. I even was suicidal at some points, and I saw some extremely dark times, and I lost a family member in college through suicide, and that was very traumatic. And so when I finally graduated from college, I quit the prescription medications I was on, which kind of helped me see the light. And my dad started lifting weights at our local gym, and I followed him in and really loved that new type of working out because I had been a dancer before, not a weightlifter. And he was benching and squatting and deadlifting. And he gave me a few of his trainers, sessions because my dad was away, and this dude was so jacked and just so good at lifting weights, and I fell in love with lifting weights. And so I got my NASM cert as a personal trainer, and I was just doing it part-time. I was working at a full-time sales job and just training clients at night, like a lot of us know that. And so finally, I left that company back in 2017, and 2018 was the start of just full-time me. And I went to health coaching school, and I was just doing personal training and health coaching. And then it just blossomed into finding my niche of pre and postnatal. And then I think it really took off, but that's awesome. Long journey to get there.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. I didn't know a lot of that about you, and it makes so much sense. Really, just the stuff that you put out, you're very like holistic in your approach. And I really like that about you. So you did find your niche in pre and postnatal. How did that kind of come about?
I think it was always in me. So there was a time when I was younger that I can really vividly remember playing with dolls, like way later than most girls play with their dolls. And I had these group of friends on my street, and we would strap them in, roll our babies up and down the streets, like, and really play with them like they were real. And we were all super excited to be moms. And I lost that feeling and that connection in college. And then it didn't come back until I met my husband in 2013. And then I was like, crap, we do want kids. And that's when I said, well, since I did so much damage to my body in college, I should probably do some research to how to prep my body. And I think I've always been a type A preparer too. And so everything I do, whether it's meal prep or working out, it's always been very planned and over the top sometimes, right? And so, yeah, I started researching preconception planning, started changing the way I ate and the way that the things I used on my body and cleaning products in my home, and researched detox. And I also, a big part of that too was watching The Business of Being Born, which is a great documentary that shows modern modern medical way of having a baby in a hospital and how it's changed completely. Births used to be all home births majoritively, and now it's like 2-3% are home births, and now our C-section rates are so high, like 1 in 3. And that made me realize that I really wanted to work in the community. And what do? I coach people exercise. And so I'm like, how can I reach that community? Is becoming a prenatal, postnatal coach, so I can be right in that community of people and hopefully let them know that exercising through your pregnancy reduces your chances of C-section and so on and so forth. And so that's what really made me decide to get the next time I needed to renew my CEUs, because obviously NASM is every 2 years. I just decided to find a pre and postnatal certifying body, and I found Fit for Birth, and I went through their schooling, and it was also a CES, a corrective exercise cert. So not only was it pre and postnatal, but I learned how to, you know, train my clients on corrective exercise, and I fell in love with that company, and he found me. I found him, the owner, and he asked me if I would wanted to work for him. So now I help people also graduating for Fit for Birth. And we send them all out into the world, all of us little pre and postnatal trainers.
I love it. And so we were kind of talking before we started recording, but Amanda is literally talking to a pregnancy prenatal. You know, I am just so blind to it. If anybody else is in the same boat, like, you are going to be getting like some in-depth information, because I obviously have questions. Birth is still pretty terrifying to me, and I'm 28 years old, and by this age my mom had 2 children, so God bless her. Yeah, it's so crazy how times change.
I know.
Yeah. How old are you?
29. Sorry.
29. Okay, that makes sense. So really the point of this episode is to talk about Amanda's story. You know, obviously, you know, pre, you know, what she does for a career, but it's kind of, you know, what she does for a career has kind of come, you know, I don't even know how I want to say it, but focusing on the pre and postnatal and what we're about to talk about, it just seems like it's very, I don't want to say fitting, but I feel like you're the right person to talk about it. Mm-hmm. So, and it's something that's not typically talked about, and that's why I was so grateful that you approached me and wanted to speak about it, because I know so many women will be affected by this and have been affected by this. And so last month, Amanda publicly shared about her experience with miscarriage. And again, that's really what we're here to talk about. So first of all, I am so sorry that that happened to you, but also thank you so much for being so strong and being so open to talking about it. So I guess I just kind of want you to take it away and start however you want to start, because it is a very personal story and I want you to be as comfortable as possible.
Sure. Thank you. And if at any point you want to stop me to ask a question, just stop me.
Okay.
But I just want to preface this also with that I am in no way a expert at miscarriage. It's just simply something that I experienced. And so everything I say is going to be based off of the things I know only because I experienced it. Because otherwise I wouldn't have gone down the rabbit hole of researching and looking at other people's experiences, because it's not right out in front of you. And so going back to like how type A I am, I think that's why I started prepping so early in my life for pregnancy as well. And so I had started tracking my ovulation 5 years ago using the fertility awareness method. I got off birth control as one of my steps towards preconception plan. And I became like a boss at knowing when I was ovulating. And I was so excited to try for the first time to see if I was going to get it right. And we tried for our first time. We got pregnant on the first try. It was crazy.
That's wild.
So like timeline, we tried around like November 12th. And by the day after Thanksgiving on the 25th, I took my first pregnancy test and it was positive. And so I was like, holy crap. First of all, the fertility awareness method really works, ladies. And for 5 years, we successfully did not get pregnant. And then the second I wanted to, we did.
Wow.
And so it was great. And I was super excited. We waited specifically until the day after Thanksgiving so that I didn't have to keep this big secret from my family during Thanksgiving. And we decided we would tell our families on Christmas. And so for the whole month, normal pregnancy symptoms started happening to me. I was definitely overly nauseous all day. I never threw up, but it was kind of like this all day dulled nausea and super low energy. So it was not fun, I have to say. I was getting dizzy coaching at Orange Theory, getting up from the floor, and I was so out of breath. And if you're a coach, you know how out of breath you get when you're trying to demo exercises and talk at the same time. It is insane. And so, all that was crazy. And then all of a sudden it just stopped. One day I went to the gym. I started as a power walker on the treadmill. And by the end, I was sprinting faster than I've ever sprinted before. And I left the gym and I said to my husband, like, Mike, I had the best workout I've had in like 2 months. And I feel like I have so much energy. And from there on out during the pregnancy, I was feeling great. And that was around week 8. And then Christmas was like right around the corner. And we told both of our families and it was amazing. And everyone was so happy for us. And I don't know if you've caught this, but this is our first pregnancy, my first pregnancy that I've ever had. And so that was December 25th. I went to go see my midwife shortly after. Like around January 6th, and she suggested that I go get an ultrasound because the fact that I felt good. It's weird. I was like,
that is weird.
Oh, I'm rocking my pregnancy. I feel great. And she on the other hand was like, well, that could also mean that your pregnancy hormones are decreasing because the fetus has passed away and it's not producing those hormones anymore.
Is there a specific window of time where this is more common, do you know?
Absolutely. Okay. It's the most common before week 12.
Okay.
Or before the start of week 13. That's why they always say wait until you're in the second trimester to tell. And it's just so isolating for women because one, you find out you're pregnant, now you have to wait. Usually you find out you're pregnant minimum 2 weeks, like when you, I think, because the first day you're pregnant is the first day of your last period, right? And so you usually conceive 2 weeks after that. And so you find out 2 weeks after. So when you find out you're pregnant, you're already 4 weeks pregnant, mm-hmm. which is kind of weird. And then you have to wait another 8, like, to tell the world. So you're holding right. the secret that for some of us is just so hard to hold.
Well, and especially in our, like, culture and society now where you find out something and you share it with yeah. everyone instantly.
Share.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it, the stigma behind that is don't share because you might lose the baby, which mm-hmm. is so awful to think that's one of the reasons why. I think it's the only reason why, really, yeah. you share is because you might lose it. And it's like, all right, so I lose it and then I can't talk to anybody because I didn't share it.
Right.
So I decided to share it on social media, I think January 5th. January 9th, I found out that I lost the baby in an ultrasound. And so when I went in for the ultrasound, I was technically 10 weeks pregnant and the baby had measured 8 weeks mm-hmm. and 5 days pregnant, which showed me that it had passed away shortly after Christmas. So I actually was pregnant when I announced it to my family and friends, but I actually wasn't pregnant anymore when I announced it on social media, which is wow. crazy. Because it's not really any way for you to know. It was the ultrasound was very heart-shattering, earth-shattering. When she put the machine on my belly, I just saw my beautiful baby's outline on the screen in front of me, and she didn't say anything at first, and I said, like, is everything okay? And she just said, I'm so sorry, but there's no heartbeat. And she probably says that all the time, but yeah. to me, it was like everything just fell apart at that moment. I couldn't stop crying, and I did not think that that would happen to me. I think in the back of my mind, I said, even if something's wrong, I think I'm going to be nice and strong, and no.
Right.
Broke down, and I really didn't think that that was going to be the case in that doctor's appointment, so I didn't bring my husband. Big mistake. I was alone, and I was just bawling my eyes out. I felt embarrassed, you know. Mm-hmm. The head radiologist came in, who was a male, and he was thankfully very kind, and he supported me, and he like walked me out a back way so I didn't have to see people. But I was, you know, super puffy eye, like sobbing.
Yeah. Oh my God. I mean, that must not feel real.
Yeah, no.
Like, I don't know. So it's hard. So in one vein for me, I'm always amazed when women talk about how connected they feel to their baby when it's so, so early on. That's to me. But then also, it's also amazing to know that you can just be told in like one sentence, like yeah. it's done.
Yeah.
I don't know if, like, did you experienced, obviously, like, not believing, like, it could just be, like, that quick.
Yeah, I had doubts. I was like, there's no way that, it was so quick, the ultrasound's so quick. So I was like, maybe they were wrong. Maybe the volume was broken. Yeah, I had those doubts for sure. And so I sat with it for a little while. I had a lot of support from my friend Holly because she had also been through this back when we used to work in sales together. Our experiences were almost identical. This was a missed miscarriage. So what it means is the baby passed, but your body had not recognized that passing yet.
Hmm.
So some women start cramping and bleeding, and that leads them to go get to the hospital and get an ultrasound where they hear those words. For me, it was completely different, and some people experienced it the way I do, where they just go in for one of their routine ultrasounds and there's no more heartbeat. And so with that, I had to choose what I wanted to do next. It's like, oh, it's not over. It wasn't even started, really. It's
crazy. So I had never heard of that. I just kind of assumed that if the baby's heart stopped beating, it would just, I don't know what I thought. Like, yeah. It would just disappear. Like, I don't really know. So, yeah, if you could talk about, you know, what your next steps had to be.
Sure. And in some instances, if the fetus is so small, it will get reabsorbed back into the body. Sometimes, too, there's different types of pregnancy losses, like blighted ovum. I don't really know the definitions mm-hmm. of them, or ectopic pregnancies, things like this. This was your average fetus was developing pretty normally up until 8.5. And so, so I had to choose whether or not I wanted to wait and miscarriage naturally, whether I wanted to take a medication that would help it speed up because it dilates your cervix, or have a surgery called a DNC, which I think stands for dilation and curettage. I probably botched that, but what they do is they dilate your cervix and they go in with like a suction and they suction all of the pregnancy tissue out. And a lot of women choose that because it's fast.
Yeah.
And it kind of allows you to get over that physical portion faster. I reached out to a few people that I knew and had who I had already were talking to in like maybe Instagram group chats. Not group chats, but just Instagram chats. One of my friends, specifically Melissa, had gone through a DNC and she had a really bad experience with it. And she, after that, like had huge blood clots and it was extremely painful after. And I also read a little bit about it creating scar tissue. And I have early stage endometriosis and I know that there already is some scar tissue in my potentially. And so I didn't want to add to that. So I decided to go with the pill.
Sorry, I hope this doesn't sound stupid, but would the surgery be similar to an abortion?
I think it's exactly the same surgery that you have.
Okay.
It is, even the medication, when you look it up, it says like the abortion medicine.
Okay.
So, and where I went after, it was an abortion clinic for all this. So I think it is exactly the same thing.
Okay.
Yep. I'm freaked out by surgery, even though it was like a day surgery and you're awake, it still freaks me out. Like I say I pass on my paps like whenever I can. I just don't like that stuff at all. So I waited a week to see if my body would naturally miscarry. So now I'm technically 11 weeks pregnant. Side note, I don't really know when to say my miscarriage was. I call my miscarriage the day that I released the fetal sac from my uterus. I think some people might say that I miscarried at 8.5 because that's when my baby actually passed away. But in my opinion, no matter what, dead or alive, in your uterus, if you have a fetus, you're still pregnant. So I waited till 11. At that point, I was referred to a really nice abortion clinic in Concord called the Women's Equality Center or Equality Health Center. And it's not just abortion, but it's also miscarriage management, birth control, kind of like a Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
I met with this amazing nurse practitioner, Rachel, and it was just so much nicer there because it was in like an old home. It wasn't this hospital and there was sofas, and she did another ultrasound. And that was huge for me because it was that second opinion and that final, she said, I asked her, are you 100% positive? And she said, yes, I'm 100% positive. And the baby was still measuring exactly 8.5, just like they. So, she sent me home with the medication. It's called misoprostol. So if you hear me say medication, it's just because I don't want to keep saying that word. I think it's also called Cytotec, but misoprostol is the generic. And I waited till I had a day off. By the way, this whole time I'm not working anymore. As soon as I found out on January 9th, I couldn't work at Orange Theory because I was way too emotional. Yeah. I had told my whole Monday night crew, the four classes in a row, that I was pregnant. Like at the end, I did this little thing where I'm like, you guys are in your transformation talent and so am I, but when you're done, I'm gonna be halfway through my pregnancy. So you're slimming your waist, I'm growing mine. Like that's how I announced it at Orange Theory. And so just to know to go back and then all be like so excited for me, be like, how are you feeling? I would have broke down.
Yeah.
So I'm still not working at this point. Wednesday rolls around. My mom comes up to stay with me because my husband's away on a business trip. So I take the medication on Wednesday in the morning. You're supposed to put like two on each side of your cheeks in between your teeth and your gums and let them dissolve for 30 minutes. And then you swallow them because it goes into your bloodstream faster. And she was like, some women start bleeding right away, like when the pills are still in their mouth. Huh. And like nothing happened. Like nothing. Like later that afternoon, I had like a little bit of pink spotting. It kind of looked like strawberry puree, like in the bottom of the toilet. Very light pink though. And she had told me if nothing crazy happens, take another round the next day. So I did. My mom slept over. The next day, I took another dose. And again, nothing really happened until about 2 p.m. where like I had some brownish clotting, very small, but nothing significant again. My mom went home. My husband got back. I decided to take Friday off. And the nurse practitioner suggested, why don't you take one more round? Or I asked, actually, because I did some research and I saw that some women did have to take 3 rounds of this medication. Some just got it in the first try, though. So I took Friday off just to let my body rest. At this, I was also taking prescription painkillers too with this because it's supposed to, that's what the directions said, to take 800 milligrams of ibuprofen, which helped the inflammation and helped the pain. So I wanted to take a break from ibuprofen too. And then Saturday, I decided to take the third round around noon with my husband. And that is the day that some crazy crap happened.
Were you feeling pain up until this point at all?
Not really. I mean, if it were minor cramps, I think that the prescription naproxen I was taking was probably masking that. But Saturday night, holy crap. We were watching TV in bed and all of a sudden I started getting really, really bad cramps. And they were super bad, and I have really bad cramps already with my periods, but these were a little bit worse. And normally if I'm on a prescription painkiller, they're not this bad. They're like kind of being masked. I decided to download a contraction timer app on my phone and like time them, because they started to get more intense and closer together. And before I knew it, I had one that was a minute long with like a 30-second break, and then I had another that was a minute long. And I felt this urge to get up, and I got up, and all of a sudden I felt like all of this liquid just flow, like you literally dumped a water bottle over. Like a lot came out all at once. It felt just like you would think your water breaking would feel like. And I like was standing at that point, so I ran over to the toilet. And I checked my pad and there was no blood. It was all just water. And so I'm assuming that was the amniotic fluid from the gestational sac that had already formed. P.S. My doctor said even though the fetus stopped at 8 and 5, the gestational sac is still going to continue to grow. So that sac was getting bigger and bigger. And so that was Saturday. That night was really traumatic. There was so much blood, way more than I read about that was going to happen. Really, 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 really big blood clots too. And there was just points where I couldn't even get off the toilet because it would just get all over the floor. Like there was no point in just trying to lay down with a pad on the feeling of your cervix dilated is the weirdest feeling I've ever had in my whole life. Like, talk about losing control of your body. You have no control. Things are just flying out of your vagina at a rate you're just so shocked about. So that was the weirdest part, was the feeling of my cervix dilated. And I was like, oh, the medicine's finally working. Like, this is it. This is it. I remember I got into a tub for a little while. That eased my cramps, but the tub was just completely brown, like from the blood. My husband was super supportive. I have a feeling that my body kind of innately knew. You're with your mom right now on Wednesday and Thursday. You don't want to do this with your mom. And then finally, my body like relaxed with my husband, and I was able to do it when he was there. Because I definitely think it would have been kind of awkward to. I love my mom, but it just would have been a little awkward for her to see me like that and all that. I was naked, you know, like. You just have blood coming out of your vagina. Like, it brought me and my husband closer together, I must say.
I mean, just even just your line of work, and not that it's like your line of work, like you're in some scandalous line of work, but I would say a lot of guys are not, it's not their norm to talk about different, you know, women's cycles or pregnancy all the time. So he must be a saint.
He was amazing.
Yeah.
I remember at way TMI too in this podcast episode, but at one point I had this huge blood clot hanging out and he's like, "You want me to pull it out for you?" Like he was so good. So we ended up, that was like, it started at 9:30 and I had about 3 hours of consistent, very, very heavy bleeding. You're going to want to have like towels around the toilet. You're going to want to, if you do decide to lay on the bed, like sleep on a towel that night, the biggest pads you can possibly get. And, I know that in like just from having periods in the past when I lie down, I don't know if this is true for you too, your blood flow slows. Mm-hmm. So I decided to lie down and we like watched the Fyre Festival documentaries on Netflix and Hulu. And I was like, this is making me feel a little bit better actually. And I eventually fell asleep. I woke up every 2 hours to change my pad because you also just want to be aware that you're not hemorrhaging. Mm. My friend said, you're going to pass a gestational sac, something that's going to look like a sac. I never remember passing that. And I'm like, sometimes I just flush the toilet. Maybe it just came out then. Mm-hmm. I wake up Sunday. I'm now 12 weeks pregnant. I remember it was every Sunday. I was a new week pregnant. And kind of wasn't even really bleeding that much. And then the next day too, I wasn't really bleeding that much. Monday night, I was really horny, right? Really weird. And I just, like, my husband gave me an orgasm. And then after that, I started having super bad contractions again. Like, super close together, super painful cramps. And then all of a sudden, I got the urge to stand up again. I went straight to the toilet. And again, my cervix was dilated. This time, without any medicine. This time was just natural. Huh. And I finally released the gestational sac 2 days later. And that time I fished it out with like a toothbrush because I just needed that closure.
Yeah.
And it was really big. It was like 4 inches wide and like the diameter of a banana.
Wow.
4 inches long and the diameter of a banana. And it looked veiny and like dark. And later on I asked, and that was the gestational sac. So if I did open that up, the baby would have been inside. We decided not to. Seeing that gestational sac was another really like emotional point. I think me and my husband both like cried again at that moment. And I didn't think I'd be able to, but I did just flush it. Some women have boxes that they put it in and bury it. I live in a townhouse with shared backyards. So I don't need people digging up my child in a year or something. So for me, I just flushed the toilet. We named our baby August. And because it was due in August, we didn't find out the gender through genetic testing or anything like that. My closure really happened after with posting my story on social media and everything. So just to go back, so that was Monday night. After that, the bleeding slowed down. If you pass your gestational sac and your bleeding does not slow down, and they say about one pad every half an hour, if you go past that, you should go to the hospital because you might be hemorrhaging. After that, I think I bled for maybe like 10 more days, like a medium to a light period. Then I had like some spotting. And then, so that was, you know, January 19th, and it's February 16th today. So it's almost been a month. Even like 10 days ago, I was like, there was some weird stuff coming, like, so just not discharge that I'm not used to. Mm-hmm. So for a while, my body didn't feel like it was mine. Just like I had to constantly be wearing like a panty liner or be walking around my Diva cup, mm-hmm. In my purse at all times, just because you never know. I had a second ultrasound, a week after that Monday experience, and it showed that the gestational sac had passed, and that was her and my final last, like, the medicine worked, you passed the gestational sac, you don't have to worry now about major things like infections, mm-hmm. Just be alert, just be aware if anything weird happens, it starts to smell weird down there because there could be a possible infection. And I finally went back to work like February 4th, and so almost a whole month I was off from Orange Theory. they were super supportive, finding me coverage. And as far as my own business that I own, I just found coverage for my classes or canceled my group fitness classes and only did a couple private training sessions here and there if they were closed.
Did, when you passed the gestational sac, was that painful?
It wasn't, actually. It was just weird.
Yeah.
It was very weird, like the feeling of it's like you lose yourself. Like, if you could see my face right now, like, you like, like, whoa, something just fell out of my vagina. Like, it's so weird, the feeling of your cervix being dilated. And honestly, I was kind of proud of myself. I was like, that just came out of my uterus. Like, whoa. And it is, I consider what I went through completely a birth. Like, it was just like a birth where, well, not just like it. It was like a mini birth, right? Mm-hmm. You have the contractions, you break your water, and you pass a baby. Yeah. And so, you know, I definitely was proud of myself to say that I've given birth to a child already. And it was just a lot sooner than a lot more women do. But it's so weird. Like, I looked at my Kindara app today, and I'm on day 115 of my cycle.
Whoa.
Because I still haven't got my period. So it's been, I haven't had a period in like 115 days.
Wow. I am on that app too because of you, FYI.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering so I have a few questions. Mm-hmm. What were your, I guess, your thoughts as far as, like, you, first of all, had been in this preconception phase for a while. You were doing all of the quote-unquote right things. And being a type A person, and sidebar, I've been reading Michelle Obama's book, Becoming. Mm-hmm. She also calls herself a type A person, and she experienced a miscarriage. And she just talked about how it was, like, I did everything right, though. Like, what, like, did you ever have that feeling, like, what in the world happened? Like, you do everything right, and this happened. Is there any explanation other than, like, it's common?
I really don't want people to start trying to even figure it out, because it's nothing that you did. And so, actually, it's super common. I think it's like 1 in 4 women will have a miscarriage before the second trimester. And that number is even different. It's much less, but you can still have a miscarriage any other time in your pregnancy. And what was the second thing I was going to say? Oh, 70 to 80% of the reasons why is genetic abnormalities or chromosomal defects. So it was the body's way of saying that this baby is not right. It wasn't meant to be. Mm-hmm. It wasn't gonna, maybe you were gonna have a baby and it was gonna pass away right when it gave birth, because it was gonna have a heart defect. Like, it did you a favor. Mm-hmm. That baby was just not meant to be. And so, yeah, I didn't try to think of all the things that I could have done. And honestly, because I was so nauseous and low energy at the beginning of my pregnancy, I actually wasn't so perfect. I was having food aversions to healthy food.
Really?
And so, like, all I was craving was pizza and mac and cheese and grilled cheese and lots of cheese.
Oh my God. That's a quick way to back you up.
But the beautiful thing that I think happened from the miscarriage in that aspect is it's humbled me to not be so strict anymore. And even I was on a podcast that I recorded right when I found out I was pregnant, and I listened to it and I sounded very, very strict in it. And I was like, damn, I'm scaring people. Like, switch to all organic and ditch all your beauty products that have sulfates in them and blah, blah, blah. And I realized that maybe, you know, that, I don't know, I just want to be the person that I want. I am for my baby always. And that doesn't mean that I have to be so perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's humbled me a little bit in that way.
Can you talk about the importance of support around this? And because I think a lot of it is, you talked about, you know, being embarrassed when you first found out. Can you talk about how just how important it is to, you know, talk to someone about it? It doesn't, obviously, you don't have to go, you know, public on social media like you did, but to have those people around you to support you through it.
Yeah, absolutely. It helped me to I did call my mom like the second I found out, but her phone was on airplane mode because she was in a meeting, and I realized that that was fine, and I needed that time just by myself. Even it proves that you can be strong in those times by yourself and not be codependent on anybody else. And I went home and I like ordered sushi to be delivered to the house because I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna eat whatever I want. I had sushi and like beer that night, and it was super helpful that I did share my pregnancy because of the fact that now I had already been talking to a bunch of people, and I could go back into those chats and be like, hey, you know what? I found out I lost the baby. And I also distinctively remember the second I found out when I got home, I went right to Instagram and I searched the hashtag miscarriage. And I saw a bunch of women sharing their stories, and I like commented and liked on like all of them. And I wrote like, I'm dealing with the same thing right now, because your emotions are so heightened right when it happens. And so just to reach out to them, it felt good knowing that other women were going through the same thing. And I was seeing that they were talking about DNCs and the medicine and naturally miscarrying and honoring their baby. And I was like, wow. And so it really, really helped for that online support with the Instagram, and also having my husband around when he came home that night. You know, we just gave each other like really big hugs and cried. And my mom came up to stay with me, and yeah, just not being so isolated, because there are so many, so many people who have been through this. And even if they haven't, they're going to be there for you. But I must say that the people who had been through it were very, very helpful.
Yeah.
The other women who had experienced it, they knew like exactly what to say, and you just felt more like part of the community, part of the world, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Are there certain things that you had wished you known about miscarriage before it actually happening?
Yeah. I wish I knew that it was going to be a lot more blood. I kind of wish I knew that it was going to be kind of scary. At some points, I was freaked out. I wish I knew. I don't think anyone literally said, like, oh, by the way, when your cervix dilates, it's going to feel really weird. I wish someone said that to me, as simple as that. I wish I also knew it could have taken more than one day. Like,
yeah.
Who knew that? Like, Saturday night, I had a huge ordeal, and then Monday night, I had a huge ordeal. I never knew a miscarriage could last. Like the bad parts of a miscarriage. I know people bleed for multiple days, but those crazy parts where your cervix is dilated and things are coming out more than 2 days apart, this crazy. And I found out also that the blood clots are actually what has formed of your placenta coming out. I thought of that like a nest, right? Like a bird like brings little twigs and makes that nest, and then it was the nest falling out. Yeah.
The visuals.
Yeah.
So to kind of wrap this up, what advice do you have for women that have either dealt with this or are, you know, planning for is there anything you would say to someone that's...
Well, if you're worried about it happening to you because you're pregnant, don't be worried, because you can't think about the things that are out of your control. It's such a waste of your energy. So just don't even think about it. And just know though, if it does happen, that there's a ton of support out there, and that there are such brighter days ahead. And I am in a weird spot that I feel grateful that it happened to me. And I, you know, by talking to other people, they've said that this is also a place that a lot of people can't get to. So I'm grateful that I've got to this point where I'm grateful.
Mm-hmm.
But I've looked back at the experience, and I, now that I've come out of it, I feel like I'm a different person. I just feel like I have a different outlook. Like it humbled me. And now when we try to have another baby, I'm going to appreciate that pregnancy so much more. I'm gonna appreciate that baby so much more, knowing that like we lost our first baby.
Mm-hmm.
And not a lot of people can say that they can try for a second time. Like they had a second chance to try. So I, you know, went public on social media, and then I just got an outpouring of people who had gone through the same thing. And just like I did when I got home from the hospital that day and hashtag searched miscarriage, people did the same thing to my post, literally messaging all my posts like, I just found out this too. Like, it was just, it's crazy.
It's so crazy. Like, that, I love social media. And I know it has really, it can have really negative effects on people, but I think that there are some really, really unique benefits to it that, like, it just connects you to, it lets you know that you're not alone in whatever you're going through.
Right.
Even just by searching a simple hashtag.
Yeah, and stay off of it when you need to, and go on it when you want to. Because I stayed off of it for a while. I was a lot quieter when I found out I was pregnant, because I really just wanted to talk about it. And every Instagram story, I just wanted to talk about, like, why I'm doing this. It's because I'm pregnant. And so I stayed off of it for a while when I first found out. And then I stayed off of it for a while when I first found out I lost the baby too, because I was just sitting with my emotions. And so I think I didn't answer your other question about biggest advice you have for when you have the miscarriage is also allowing yourself to be in pain. Don't try to always find another way out of the pain. You have to sit with it and feel it and know that it's real and honor it every step of the way, and whatever that looks like for you. And don't feel bad if you didn't name your baby, and don't feel bad if you didn't go out and get a tattoo about your baby. Like, it's whatever you do is your thing,
right?
And own it.
I love that. Thank you so much for, again, for being so brave and for being willing to share the story. It's obviously something that I know I can't tell, and I know nothing about. So having your perspective on it has been really enlightening. And I told you before we started it, it's really kind of changed my perspective about future pregnancies. And I know obviously everyone says, like, it's such a miracle, but, like, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, really it is. What is next for you? Like, what do you have? Are you just taking things slowly? And how can people find you and connect with you if they want to learn more about you or what you do or just chat?
Sure. Yeah, we're going to take it slower now. And we're planning a trip to the Florida Keys in April, and I kind of want to just be able to, like, have some drinks with my family and not worry about it. So I think we're going to start trying again maybe after April, just letting my body store up some nutrients. And yeah, I have some really exciting things coming up, even in the pipeline, like talking 2 years out, like, for my business. And so people can find me at thefunctionalbump.com, and my Instagram is healthyamandafaye. And you can find, like, all of my Facebook links and emails there, too. And I would love it if everyone gave me a follow.
Yeah. I'll put all of, like, your links and handles in the show notes. But, yeah, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I am so honored that I'm coming back with the Strong Girl podcast and launching with this episode with Amanda's story. And a huge thank you to Amanda for speaking so open and honest about her experience, this experience that so many women do deal with, will deal with, and really just letting them know that they're not alone. And I think, you know, we kind of touched upon it, but that's what's really great about social media. For every negative about social media, there really is just so many positives to go along with it. So I'm really, really grateful that Amanda asked to share her story on my podcast, because I think it's going to be so beneficial to so many women. And, you know, even if you don't deal with something like this, just to understand the emotional side of it, the physical side of it that you know, you might not realize. So I am going to be doing another episode next week. I'm not going to let you guys hang. Another great, great conversation with my friend Christina about eating disorders, about competition. So it is going to be another sensitive topic, but it's a really, really great conversation. So again, thank you so much. If you enjoyed this episode, if you enjoyed this podcast, please, please, please share it. Do share it with the caveat, though, that it is a sensitive topic. And tag myself, tag Amanda. I am putting all of her information in the show notes wherever you are listening, so you can connect with her there if you have any extra questions for her, or, you know, just want to reach out and follow and see what she's doing, because her social media is awesome. She shares a lot of really awesome tips, and that's how I found her. So, definitely check her out, and I will catch you guys next week.